What?
It touched me!
It's been touching you for 12 years. You never freaked.
Not you!
What?
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. This is episode 16, the number 16, that is. And this week's episode, we are doing the 1988 film, The Great Outdoors, starring John Candy and Dan Aykroyd. But before we get into that, let me introduce the hosts. My name's Sean, and with us here is my good buddy, door-to-door geek, Steve McLaughlin. What's up, Dor?
Sweet 16, baby. Good times.
Did you have a sweet 16?
No, it was horrid. It was painful. Unlike The Great Outdoors, where, let me tell you something, this movie, dude, John Candy in his prime, his laugh exhibits just jubilance. I mean, when I hear him do that deep, I love it. It literally just makes me happy.
Yeah, I like John Candy. I don't think I've really seen much where I wasn't impressed with him. Actually, I don't know if it was Canadian Bacon. Was that one of his movies?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There was something, Rob, you were visiting Canada. Do you remember, Clifton Hill when you were up in Canada?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, in Canada, you can drink when you're 19. Here in New York, you gotta be 21. So we used to go to Canada and drink, and we were at a club, and, they announced at the club that they were having people could go down the street to be extras. And what I thought it was Canadian Bacon, but I'm not sure what movie it was. But I mean, we didn't go, but it was kind of cool. They were shooting something at the falls or around there somewhere. So that was, as close as I got to him.
That was the movie where it was born in the USA, born in the USA. And they just looped and they couldn't get out of that loop. They just kept singing that one line over and over again.
Also there, Rob Flack O'Hara. What's going on, Rob?
What's going on? I didn't have a sweet 16. I had a sweet 40th birthday last week. So I'm
happy late birthday.
I'm almost an adult now. I don't feel like an adult. I am, at some point, don't you think you should start like dressing and looking like an adult?
Fight it, man.
Don't
fight
give
it.
In.
I was driving around the other day, backwards baseball cap. I had the window down, Star Wars t-shirt, cargo shorts. I'm like, I really feel like I should not be doing this anymore, but I don't know. Like, I can't imagine my dad at 40 driving around town with a Star Wars t-shirt on, you know, but I don't know. I guess age is just a number, you know?
Yeah, you got to keep rocking those cargo shorts and the Star Wars t-shirts.
Forever.
You know, I mean, I'm 30. I'll be 39 next month, and my wife, she's the same age, and she'll be like, oh, I'm getting old, this or that. You know, foods don't taste the same because we're getting old. And the other week I was like, I'm not saying it anymore. We're not even 40. I mean, we're not old.
You know, I think this
don't age us earlier.
It's like 6 months ago or so, I went into work and I had this bruise on my arm. And so this is the first sign that you're getting old, is you get bruises and you can't remember where they came from. Like, I think that might be a sign. And then what made it worse is I did figure out where it came from. And it was because, I had been laying on the floor watching a Breaking Bad marathon. And so I literally got sore from watching television. And I think that's it. That's when you're over the hill. I've hurt myself watching television.
Rob's getting bed sores from watching a couple episodes of Breaking Bad.
Yep.
Susan, can you roll me over so I don't get bed sores?
Right, you're going to flip me over every commercial break or whatever. Yeah. They've just been like a big pancake spatula. They just flip you right over. So, I think that's probably a good sign.
Well, if for people that have seen any video of your Star Wars or your collection room, they'll know you're not old. You're still a child at heart.
Yeah, my PayPal account reflects that, unfortunately.
And you just got a new Star Wars figure. We were showing each other We posted some pictures on Facebook. I threw on some of my old vintage ones.
Yeah. Well, you threw on parts of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sean, I don't know. It makes me, Sean sends me pictures of just Star Wars figures' heads. Like this pile. And you know what? I just started listening to a new podcast called, Galaxy of Toys, which is all about Star Wars toys. And every episode when it's over, I go straight to eBay and I gotta start listening to podcasts that don't encourage me to buy things. That's all this one does, is it makes me want to go out and start buying more Star Wars stuff. But I collect, unlike Sean, I collect the entire figure. I like the ones with the arms and the legs and the head and the body. Like mine all the parts.
Mine started off that way.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, except for that one Chewbacca doll where his arm's falling off. That's completely different.
Which I busted you on that one. You had him all turned a certain way trying to get away with it. I'm like, wait a minute.
You know, he does have one arm back now. So we're doing Wookiee surgery.
That's his bowcaster arm. Where is it? Oh, man. But anyways, good times. So, yeah, let's get into this movie. Rob, you want to give us our summary of this movie?
Sure. So, like you said, we all watched The Great Outdoors. This movie is about the Ripley family who leave Chicago behind for a family vacation at a Wisconsin lakeside cabin. But minutes after arriving, their vacation is crashed by Chet Ripley's brother-in-law, Roman Craig, his snooty wife, and his creepy twin girls. I'm sure we'll be talking about those girls. Tempers begin to flare as personalities. Oh, my gosh. They are creepy. Those are the girls that couldn't make the Double Mint commercials. They're too creepy for that. So tempers begin to flare as personalities conflict. And Roman's family outstays their welcome in this 1988 vacation comedy written and produced by John Hughes. I did make a note here. John Hughes, most people probably know, is responsible for Vacation. After doing this movie, he worked with John Candy on a few other films, including Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and Uncle Buck. And John Hughes is also responsible for several 80s classics that may end up on this podcast at some point, including 16 Candles and Pretty in Pink.
Yeah, I'll say this is classic Hughes. This had everything perfect for the 80s.
And one of the things that we'll talk about later, but John Hughes, I think, was really good at writing skits. You know, there are a lot of like short stories, and this is a movie of several different adventures and short stories that are kind of pieced together to form a movie. I think this movie, I looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes, and I think this is kind of telling about this movie. It has a 40% approval from critics, but it has a 70% approval from viewers. So I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, it may not be what Hollywood reviewers were looking for in a film, right, but I think there are so many things in here that viewers relate to when they watch it, that people have a lot of fond memories of this film.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every kid around that age dreamt of going on vacation for 2 weeks, meeting a really hot girl, and having a good time. Unfortunately, it only happened to a small percentage of us.
And they're not on this show.
Yeah.
You know, yesterday, Rob, we briefly, you had brought up the point, and I was thinking the same thing with this movie. It is just a series of different events. I mean, you have the two different families. One, you know, Dan Aykroyd's character, he's a complete schmuck. I mean, he's, you know, but it's there's not that story.
It reminded me of like a typical Saturday Night Live type movie, you know, where they basically come up with 10 skit ideas and they throw these skits out and then they're just kind of loosely pieced together. And in this film, I think the skits are more memorable than the overall arc of the story. You know, a lot of the people, I got some feedback this week. People found out that we were doing this movie, and some of the emails, you know, that I got, comments that I got were, I remember this story. Like, people would make, like, people had comments about the bear story. People had comments about the bat that flies around. And we'll talk about those scenes. But nobody talked about, you know, the overall kind of story. It was just they remembered those little vignettes, for lack of a better word.
Right, yeah. Like, you had just certain scenes that stood out from the movie, which is how it was for me. Like, the bat scene was definitely one of the scenes that stuck out in my mind when I thought, because I haven't seen this movie, I mean, in years, to be quite honest.
Yeah, that bat scene was just pure gold. Partially because of their getup, partially because, I don't know about you guys, I basically had that happen to me, where you're in a house and all of a sudden a bat flies by your face and it takes you a split second and then you start freaking out like a little girl because there's nothing you can do.
I never had a bat. We had a bird get caught in our house, and it was very similar. And my desire to touch a wild bird is right up there with wanting to touch a wild bat. I don't want to touch either one of them. And it did do the crazy flying around thing. So,
yeah, all we could do was open up the doors and windows and hope we could get it to go out the door. Just walk around waving a broom and stuff around. And then somebody else standing outside, okay, he's out, and pray to God one didn't fly in that we didn't see.
Yeah, luckily I never had any situations like that. But, I mean, did you guys do a lot of camping as kids? I mean, did you camp and just like go out tent camping, or did you go to like this wasn't a resort, but I mean, this wasn't just your average cabin either, camping. I mean,
yeah, we went camping in a tent and, you know, campground with other campers close to us. It wasn't like we were deep in the hills, but we weren't in cabins or resorts per se. It was definitely campgrounds, seemingly at least two times a year for at least a decade straight.
Yeah. How about you, Rob? Did you do a lot of camping or?
No. We had a half acre backyard when I was growing up. So I had a couple of birthday parties where we had a tent in my backyard. That was mm-hmm. pretty much, the closest to camping we got. I don't think I ever really went camping, until I got married. My wife, when she was younger, worked at a Girl Scout camp. So she's very outdoors. She likes camping. She used to teach, rappelling and sailboating and things like that. So her idea of a good time is to, you know, pull the tent out of the garage, get whatever, throw it in the truck, and go out in the middle of the woods. We have compromised. We've gone quote unquote camping before, but it was much more like the cabin that you see in this movie. And that's my idea of camping. It's a 2-story cabin with a hot tub, flat screen TV, and no bats inside, preferably.
Yeah, I mean, like Dora, we used to go camp. Well, we would go once a year for a week, excuse me, every summer growing up. And those cabins were just rustic cabins that we would stay in. So they were at the Allegheny State Park. So it's not like a town. Like, this was kind of like a town for tourists to come every summer, mm-hmm. probably dead in the winter. But, you know, I never did anything like that until I was my first wedding anniversary. My wife and I went to a place where it was kind of similar to this, where everything was there. You know, you had your bathroom and, you know, all you had to do is bring your food and your clothes. I mean, they had the bedding and the utensils and everything like that. So, you know, but most of my camping as a kid was more rustic-y kind of camping. But I will say this, we didn't sing songs on the way. Usually, yeah. My brother would be playing video games or something, and I'd be staring out the window or whatever. But, you know, if any music was on, it was like, I remember most time on the way home, be like Casey Kasem's, like, what was it? Top 20 or top 50 countdown
top
or 40, something.
Man, top 40.
Yeah. I remember listening to that.
Yeah. And that was the first thing that blew me away about this movie. They were all singing and they were all jubilant singing on the way to vacation, and I'm thinking, what in the hell kind of family is this? They're weird.
We had Goofy Gold, which was a K-Tel album. I want to say it was, I think we got it on vinyl, and my mom had, you know what? We originally had it on 8-track, before we got it on vinyl. And so the only 8-track player we had was in our car. So Goofy Gold was one of those many, many compilation albums, you know. It had, I think Yakety Yak was on there. It had Monster Mash. It had Purple People Eater, those kind of songs.
So, right.
But since it was on an 8-track, we didn't have an 8-track player in our house. We only had it in the car, you know. So that was always – so that was our road trip music was – you know, driving around singing, you know, Steve Martin's King Tut.
Yeah.
Those kind of songs that were on there.
You know, it's funny, even now, like when we go with the kids, we don't, we're not like big singers on road trips. Most of the time it's, you know, my wife now, she's got either got her face buried in her tablet and the kids have the DVD player going. And I'm just, a lot of times I'll have my earbuds in driving. It's, but just driving around town, we'll be that crazy family all singing, dancing in the car, but come long road trip times, just kind of like every man for themselves.
At the beginning of this movie, and it does set the tone that these four, and this is the Ripleys. This is John Candy's family. So you've got John Candy as the dad. I did not know the mom or either of the two kids from anything, but it does set that tone that, you know, they are a tight knit family. They're singing together. They're having a good time.
Right. And they're like the average family. They're not a, yeah, you know, real wealthy family. I will say his wife, Connie, I recognized her from one of our favorite Halloween movies here. Hocus Pocus. I don't know if you've ever seen that with, it's got Bette Midler and, oh geez, the girl from Sarah Jessica Parker. It's from 93, but she's the mother in that movie, and that plays in our van like from like at the beginning of October to up until Halloween. Like
I don't think I ever saw it.
It's just one of our family favorites at Halloween. But yeah, you know, nice family, and then you have, you know, Dan Aykroyd and his family coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he plays, you know, what I really thought, in Tommy Boy, you remember Tommy Boy with, mm-hmm, Chris Farley or whatever, and Dan Aykroyd plays, the brake part salesman or whatever, but I thought it was that same kind of character. He's like the slick businessman, you know, everything, he's gonna correct Chet on everything he says, he's gonna one up you on everything, you know, if you have the Ripleys, they pull up in their station wagon. And then, of course, Dan Aykroyd, he pulls up in the Mercedes or whatever. So everything is, you know, about money. Very, I guess, yuppie, I guess you would say, from that time frame, you know.
Right, yeah.
But very materialistic. We see him later with a giant, you know, the brick cell phone, which would have been pretty rare at this time, you know.
Well, to me, the dead giveaway, I mean, clearly exposing everything about him, was when they were sitting out on the deck and John Candy said, well, what do you see? I see, you know, trees and freedom and open air. And Dan Aykroyd went on like a 3-minute tirade of, I see underutilized expansions of the Great North. I see a resort, a waste disposal center, a sewage treatment plant. It's like, wow.
I love that part. And Rob, you pointed out to me the Jedi glasses, the collector's cups from what was it, Burger King or Pizza Hut or something?
Burger King, yeah. But it's funny too, because I'm sure I would have never spotted those as a youngster or whatever, you know.
Oh,
or,
God, no.
But you know, now, of course, everybody has, like, we have a big, you know, giant flat screen TV, and so everything's so big, you know, and I'm sitting there watching it as I'm laying in front of my television getting more bruises, you know, watching this movie. And
getting your bed sores and your lesions.
But I immediately spotted those glasses. So I thought that was I can't imagine that would be a product placement kind of thing. I mean, I think the Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. You could see, I mean, I was watching on my netbook, a little 10-inch screen, but I could tell one was the Max Rebo band.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, Return of the Jedi is 83 and this is an 88 movie. So,
Which, but they, I mean, that kind of makes sense. Like I was saying, that the cabin that my wife's and I stayed in the one time that was like furnished and had all the, like all the glasses and everything. I mean, everything was just a hodgepodge, you know,
mm-hmm.
tons of different things. So that actually is kind of cool how they would have them just, you know, tucked in. Someone had them at the time because it was an older couple that owns this cabin resort,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of cool. And like you said, the cell phone. Even the camcorder when the Craigs come in there.
It was huge.
Right. So let's, I mean, this really kind of, I mean, we already have this dichotomy. You have the two guys and I'll be honest with you. At the beginning of this film, I didn't understand how these two guys were related.
Yeah.
But I guess their wives
are sisters. Which
but,
you don't find out till the end.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, they kept saying, you know, here's my uncle and here, but they have different last names. So I don't know. I thought maybe that should have been introduced way earlier
yeah,
in the plot, you know.
I wasn't sure if it was John Candy and Dan Aykroyd's wife or Dan Aykroyd and John Candy's mm-hmm. wife or wife. I was not clear, like you said, until the very, very end, which for being so OCD, I just wanted to know that answer, mm-hmm. like, quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I, the same thing, Dora. I don't think when I was younger I cared one bit, but,
right.
you know, I was doing the same thing. I'm like, who is related here by blood? And then until the end when Roman yeah. gives that bullcrap story.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think we care about it now, and it's only because we know a blood relationship, they should give a little bit more, be willing to take a little bit more crap, where the other one should be fighting.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And it's who can you, like, you know, if me and my buddy go out, I'm not going to be, you know, rude to his wife.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so that's where I was trying to figure out where that relationship, but so in the pretty much the opening scene of this movie, there's a couple of parts about this we can talk about, but at the very beginning, we have John Candy and his wife in the cabin. This is a cabin with windows open on all four sides. I want to set this up. They have sent their kids off into the village. I mean, basically off into this town, this resort town, to go exploring. The front door is obviously not locked because in a minute, Dan Aykroyd is going to walk in and he convinces his wife this is a good time for her to take her clothes off.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to make out in the,
right in the kitchen.
Right. The kitchen of this cabin. Now, and of course this is a PG movie at best. I guess there was some language, I guess, and we'll talk about that later. But, so you don't see any nudity. It's obviously implied, you know, John Candy, there's a close up of him, cracking his knuckles as he, works his magic and unfastens her bra,
you know.
Yeah. But then we see his brother come in and he sees what's going on, or not his brother, his brother-in-law sees what's going on and he comes in with this giant, you know, from the 80s, camcorder, and he's recording this. So I don't know what you guys thought about this scene. I thought, number one, I would have been much more upset at someone coming in, that, especially somebody that we just, you know, that we've said is not a blood relative. And then number two, maybe my wife and I are, I tend to think we're pretty open about stuff, but the days that I could get her to a cabin where all the windows are open and I could get her shirt off in about 4 minutes, maybe there was some drinking going on in the Ripley vacation that we didn't see happen. But I don't know. I thought that all moved pretty fast.
Yeah. And I would have at least thrown something at Dan Aykroyd. I would have probably swung it. Because the kicker is, his wife is standing right next to him. Dan Aykroyd brings in his wife and his two little girls to see this.
That's right. That's right.
It's like, dude, you are completely classless.
Well, that's the whole thing of his character. He has no clue about anything to do with family and, you know, respect for another person. He's this money crunching, you know, what we think to be the successful money guy.
Right.
So because we even, you know, we find out he has no idea how to relate to his kids or anything. So, but yeah, I mean, I agree. I would have been pissed off myself much more so than that.
Well, and I'll say in hindsight, this is the first and only movie I can recollect where the good guy's name is Chet. Chet to me historically in my brain
weird
is
science.
Always exactly. It's always that a bad guy's
one,
name.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the only other one I could come up with was Weird Science.
Yeah, and then John Candy's name was Chet. So instinctively I'm thinking, wait a minute. Now shouldn't his name be like John or Bill or Hank? Not yeah. Chet.
I for the most part, well, and Dan Aykroyd's name is Roman. Which I don't know. I for the most part, I don't think I remembered most of the people. I had to look up all the kids' names. I didn't remember any of their names from the movie.
Yeah.
I just remember his oldest Buck just because of Uncle Buck.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I'll just say Dan Aykroyd's name in the movie should have been Thurston because I can picture him being a Thurston because he was very like jolly about when he would talk and say, well, Chet, we have to have lobster. Not hot dogs. Do you know what those things are made of?
How about the gourmet here? You know what he wanted? Oh. Hot dogs.
Okay.
I like this character. I thought he was funny. I mean, I thought they were both great.
Oh, yeah. To me, John Candy and Dan Aykroyd both played off of each other so well in this movie. There might not have been a glorious story arc and all this kind of thing, but the interactions between those two were just genuine.
You get the... I got the feeling, anyway, that... that they were almost, they were so believable. I just felt like they were kind of playing extensions of themselves, you know, and John Candy was playing up the nice guy, the down to earth type of guy. And Dan Aykroyd was playing up, you know, his little more type A personality traits. But you almost got the feeling like they weren't acting, you know? I mean, they really, I thought they were pretty believable.
Yeah. The one scene that made me really think this is really John Candy being John Candy was when he was pouting and he was threatening to leave and his wife basically started to tickle him. To me, that was just John Candy being John Candy.
Yeah. My only problem with that scene, and I agree with you. I have had my wife upset at me before and I can't imagine tickling her would diffuse that situation.
Yeah, but it's different. Guys and girls are different. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you could be mad at your wife, and there's things that, you know, she could change your mind easily that it's not going to work on a woman. We're just different creatures. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, she's touching me and tickling me. Okay, I'm not mad anymore.
And honestly, if I ran into John Candy, I mean, when he was alive, you know, I would probably try to tickle him. I mean, he's that kind of, you know what I mean? He's that, he's cuddly.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought they did play it off well. The, you know, Roman being the one who really got under it. John Candy's skin, Chet's skin, and just a little side remarks that Chet would constantly be making under his breath or, you know, I really did like that. But really, I don't want to say it's a hard movie to review. It's just that it's hard as far as the plot line of the movie. It's like we said in the beginning, it's just a series of events. So, I mean, we should probably, why don't we touch on some of the things sure. that happened? Like when Chet starts giving his, you know, big, intense bear story that the mother is going along with at first, but then she starts kind of noticing the family getting scared and nervous. Rob, you didn't really go camping or anything, so I don't know but I'm sure you have some sort of stories to relate to of maybe an elder in your family kind of creeping you out.
You know what? This is funny. And so if you haven't seen this movie, I mean, basically what he's doing is he's telling a ghost story. You know, except for it's about this bear, the bald-headed bear of Clare County.
Exactly.
That has, you know, he had a close encounter with when he was a kid and that this bear is still on the loose, you know, and of course he's scaring all the kids. And then at the end, he's like, well, it's just kind of a fun story. Let's see, probably third or fourth grade, I went to Boy Scout camp for a week. I was a Boy Scout for about 3 months. It was a horrible experience. It was very traumatizing. I got beat up a lot as a Boy Scout. And the culmination of this experience was I got to spend a week at Camp Kickapoo. And so we went to Camp Kickapoo. And I know where it is. It's about 15 miles from my house. But at the time, I really thought it was in another state. I mean, they put you in this van and they drive us all out there, you know. And so we get out there and they've got all these Boy Scouts. We're standing out. It's like 120 degrees. And they're telling us all the rules of Camp Kickapoo. Like, don't, you know, do this, don't do that. And then at the very end of this, they said, by the way, whatever you do, you need to treat the woods and the forest with respect. Because Kickapoo Joe is this old man who lives in the woods. And then the person giving this speech was like, and there he is. And we all turn around and there's this old man like standing in the woods. And then he runs off. I swear to God, the whole week, like they were like, you know, okay, now it's time to go swimming. I'm like, are you kidding? Kickapoo Joe is going to get us, you know? And now in retrospect, first of all, I think all those camp counselors were probably like 16, you know? And I'm guessing Kickapoo Joe was a 16-year-old in a pair of overalls, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was just a thing to try and keep us in line. But honestly, the entire week, and I mean, even for, I don't want to say for years later, but I, like, we would go, if we went to the woods, I would be looking over my shoulder, you know, for so Kickapoo Joe. It did. I, to this day, I would not litter in the woods. I'm sure Kickapoo Joe would come find me, you know, so.
Maybe that's Kickapoo Joe that is, next door to you at the hotel there that's slamming the doors.
Ryan, we talked about that earlier, that I'm actually recording from a hotel room tonight. And, yeah, there's a guy next door that keeps slamming his door. I bet it is Kickapoo Joe. If it is, I'm going to sleep under my bed tonight. So, but yeah, so it is funny because, watching this movie as an adult, we see this from John Candy's point of view. He's telling a scary story. He has a good laugh. And then, of course, all the kids are terrified. But I mean, as a kid, you would have a much different, interpretation of the scene.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I'll say, this is the kind of thing to me that made this movie great. I guess the things that make up this movie are greater than its entirety. Because like that kind of scene in that movie stands out to me much more than your normal scenes in your normal movies.
I agree 100%. I mean, before we watched this movie last week, I mentally said, what would I rate this movie? And I said about a 7 out of 10. Then when I watched the movie, I was like, this is like a 4 out of 10. I mean, just because the film itself, you know, the plot is weird and it's kind of weirdly paced and these stories don't always come together. And now, not having seen it for a week, I'm like, yeah, it's probably a 7 out of 10, you know, because you don't remember those things. What you remember is the bear. And in fact, a couple of people, on the Facebook page commented about the bear story, you know, so you're absolutely right. Those are the things. And those are the things I think that we can relate to, you know, people have that similar kind of story, may not be with a bear, but.
Yeah. You know, and when I think about this movie is it's for me, this will be one of those movies where if I'm, let's say I'm laying in bed, I want to watch something, but I kind of want to fall asleep. It's one of those movies for me. Or if I'm doing something, I'm not going to really pay attention. This will be one of those kind of movies.
Yeah. It's definitely one that you can pick up anywhere in the middle because you're going to watch one of those little stories and it'll be 10 or 15 minutes and then, you know, moves on to the next one.
Well, okay. Right. I'll say the one thing about this movie that really sticks in my head, I believe, I could be completely wrong, I believe this movie had an effect on American culture more than a lot of other movies. The old 96er. I swear I never remember a restaurant having a challenge before I saw this movie. And now since this movie was out, I would go on vacation with my parents and I would see restaurants doing challenges like, can you eat our plate of insane wings? Can you eat the giant burger kind of thing? It was like that old 96er thing, whether it was taken from reality and put into the movie or put from the movie into reality. I think that kind of thing had an effect on culture.
Yeah, I remember actually seeing something like this before this movie. And the 96er was this giant steak that he had to eat everything off the plate.
Including the gristle.
Yeah. And, you know, in order to get everybody's meal for free. But when I was a kid, I mean, this was probably like 83. There was, and it's still there, this ice cream parlor The next town over, and we had stopped there. My grandmother, my mother, and my brother, my father, we all stopped, and they had a thing called the Monster. And it was basically like this giant, you know, banana split type thing that if you could finish it, then whoever you were with basically got their ice cream for free. And there's just no way. It's kind of like the thrashing. Remember, we were talking in thrashing with that big bowl of ice cream that that girl ate. And we're just like, there's no way you're hanging out after that, you know? So, I used to go when I would get my paycheck during the week, me and my buddy would stop at this little diner. It was a little hippie diner, and they had this thing called the Grimace. And it was just, I mean, this thing was like 12 burger patties with layers of everything. And you didn't get anything for free, but you got your name on the board of finishing it.
Well, we had, there's a very famous steakhouse in Amarillo, Texas, which is just west of Oklahoma. So when I was a kid, whenever we went on road trips out west, it's the type of place where you would see billboards coming up, you know. And they have a 72-ounce steak challenge. So it's a little bit smaller, I guess, than the 96er. But they were famous for that same thing where you had to eat everything. I mean, you had to eat the fat, the gristle, whatever that they brought out there, you know. And I've heard lots of people who say they know somebody who, you know, ate the whole thing. But I don't know anybody personally who's ever done it. But, it's definitely one of those tourist type of things. Like I said, for miles as you're coming up on it, there'll be these billboards, you know. But, I've never tried it. And nobody who ever does those food challenges ever looks that happy when they're done with it, you know.
I don't know, but speaking from a male's point of view, I will say the one scene that really stuck out in my mind as a child, as a teenager, and now, I'm sorry, was that playing pool scene. Because I have no idea that girl they cast as the love interest for Buck. I don't know where I've seen her. I don't know if I've seen her in anything else. All I know in this movie, she was quite attractive.
Yeah, I looked her up. I knew I had seen her before. A movie called Cheetah, I think. And I think she was on L.A. Law or something like that for a few years. She definitely looked familiar. That scene in the pool hall, I don't know. I don't know. It just seemed like I was glad my kid wasn't it, because my kid was like coming in and out of the room. And I was like, I don't need to explain why that's wrong. How it worked.
I thought the whole love interest thing for me just kind of felt tacked on. It didn't seem like it kind of fit with the rest of the movie, but looking at it now from a film perspective, you can see why it's there. And the reason why is because the target audience for this movie is 15-year-old boys. So, anybody that's going to this, I mean, obviously they want to see, or maybe it wasn't originally that, but you have a wider audience by putting this in.
Well, yeah. And to me, it was twofold. One for that, one to show Buck becoming a man, confirmation when that he gave him the ring, that Buck is becoming a man.
Yeah, because he was standoffish, you know, Dad, what are you going to give me? You know, I want a hug or, he wanted to be. Because that was the whole point of Chet taking his family there, was he wanted them to experience this place how he did as a child.
What we've been talking about since episode one kind of thing.
Yeah, and probably like us, it's just not working for him.
Exactly.
You know, it's just different. He's too old at that point. I think his youngest son definitely was more able to be shaped into appreciating it. I mean, he went on the bear watch with him and stuff like that. But yeah, Buck definitely was just like, all right, looking at his watch, he wants to get out of there.
Right.
Where you could see his younger son probably was more into watching his dad choke down this 96, you know, this 6-pound steak, where he just Buck wanted to get out of there because he had a date to meet up with Cammy.
And you know, I've had both experiences with my kids. I've had those. I'm sure you guys have too. Like, you pull out some movie that you loved as a kid or whatever, you know, and you put it on, and 10 minutes later, my kids are like, we're going to watch SpongeBob. You know, I mean, it's like, whatever it is, it just doesn't. grab their attention. And I'm not talking about like, you know, I mean, like a generic movie. I'm talking about movies that I loved. You know, I put on The Last Starfighter. I couldn't get my kid to sit 10 minutes. I'm like, wait, I'm like, he's going to go to space. Just, you know, give it a little time. But so you do have those moments, but then every now and then one pays off. You know, I just, mentioned, well, you know, I mentioned that we went to, we've been to a couple of retro arcades recently, you know, with the family and stuff. And we went, to Fun Spot in New Hampshire, and they had a 3-player Rampage machine. Ah. And I showed my kids how to do it, and we all, you know, put coins in, and I'm sitting there playing Rampage with my kids, and I'm thinking, I was my kids' age when I first played that. And so that's what reminded me of this movie, where it's like every now and then you do have that experience that you share with them. But so we kind of see that with his two kids, that, you know, the younger one seems to be more into willing to, you know, follow his dad around, do what his dad does, while, Buck is getting a little bit too old for the family thing.
Yeah. Except for when it comes to Suck My Wake. Was it Suck My Wake or the speed boat?
Yeah.
They definitely bailed on Chet for the pontoon boat, yeah. Which honestly, I would have rather been on the pontoon boat if it were me. I'm more into, you know, we have the river right by me, and I'm just more of, I'd like to just cruise down the river myself, but
well,
I'm not into all that speedboat and stuff.
I'll say yes now, give me the pontoon boat, but if I was Buck's age or his brother's age, give me the speedboat.
Right. So there's a scene in this movie that, and this is one of those, just a ridiculous movie scene. This is one of those scenes that just doesn't happen in real life.
The talking raccoons.
Well, that too. Yeah. So Chet is going to show his son how to, ski, to water ski. And so he's holding onto the rope. They're standing on the deck side by side. And, his brother-in-law, you know, he's kind of waving at his brother-in-law on the boat, and they misinterpret this as he is telling them to gun it. So they floor this boat, which is called, what was it called?
I thought it was something like,
Suck My Wake. I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. So they take off in this speedboat. They're flying at this high rate of speed, and you've got John Candy, or a stuntman that is supposed to look like John Candy, skiing at this high rate of speed. And, you know, he's just yelling and whatever. All he has to do is let go of the rope.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what drives me crazy about this scene. And I know that it's a movie and that you have to let some things go, but this is something that anybody, I mean, and so, you know, at one point he's telling him, he's yelling, you bastard. And they said, what? Go faster.
Go faster. So
they go even faster. But well, this seems like a easily solved problem.
Well, no. Here was the thing. Right before they took off, he kept saying to the kid, if you come into any trouble,
yes,
just let go. He said it to the kid like twice.
Exactly, yep. Right.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. I thought that scene was kind of funny. I mean, just as one of the skits, another skit that's in the movie. But, I mean, yeah. I mean, because you could take that to the – when they're watching the Bears, you know, he's throwing the Zagnut bars, which I got to be honest, I hadn't heard of a Zagnut bar since, what, Beetlejuice?
Yeah.
That's right.
He's like, ooh, a Zagnut. When they show on a little model.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot all about that.
That's a great movie. That's one of those movies we tried to watch with my older son, and he's just like, no, I'm not ready, Dad.
Really? Ready my kids that. Love yeah. that movie. But, you know, I'm willing to go a certain, you know, suspend a certain amount of belief. You know what I mean? Like when they're feeding the bears, and then now the bears are on the car, and he's driving away very slowly, and so the bears are still on his car. It's like, you know, you're like, well, he could floor it and the bears would fly off, but that might tear up his car or whatever. So, you know, I give him the benefit of the doubt. But when the whole problem is you're being towed too fast behind a ski boat, I don't know. It just seemed like it was a stretch that he wouldn't have let go 5 seconds into that. But you're right. It is another funny little 5-minute scene, you know.
Yeah, we wouldn't have the burn marks on the dock when he take off.
Yeah,
if he would have just did what he told Ben and just let go of the rope. Because Dor's right. That's what I was gonna say. He just kept telling him, "What are you gonna do, Ben?" He's like, "No, you're gonna drop the rope. If something happens, drop the rope."
Right.
But you know.
Yeah. And,
it was funny.
And I'll say that's the kind of thing that made this an 80s movie. With this scene where he just wouldn't let go and did all this crazy stuff and did it on like one ski and he went on a jump and all this kind of stuff. But the talking raccoons made this a Hughes film to me. Because Hughes would do this kind of weird thing, it seemed like. He would throw stuff in that had nothing to do with the movie, or if there was a story in the movie, had nothing to do with the story. Just these raccoons that would talk to each other and eat their trash.
Right, so it's all subtitled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could see it fitting in because they're camping and, you know, they keep getting into the garbage and they eventually get into the house. But yeah, like the whole conversation and they're even saying what's in the hot dogs, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They're like, oh, yes, a whole yes. bet, you know, there was look at all these raw hot dogs or whatever. And the one yell, you know, telling them, well, you know what's in there?
Right. But, so let me ask you this. That. Have you, before this movie, had you ever heard that that's what hot dogs were made of? Because I've heard people say it recently. And yeah. so I'm wondering if it all derives from this film or if nope. or people already said stuff like that.
No, no. Yeah, I never really
did. This is the first place I heard it.
No, no. Right around the corner, i.e. in Baltimore, SK Meat is there. It's a big, quote-unquote, meat facility that sells hot dogs, bacon, bologna, all this kind of stuff all over this area. And I think it extends outside of the state of Maryland. My father-in-law worked in SK. He worked in the hot dog packing plant.
Oh.
He will not eat hot
la,
dogs.
La, 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 I don't want to hear bad things about
you
hot
don't.
Dogs.
You don't. No, you don't. No, that's no. Here's the thing. If I bring him generic hot dogs, he won't eat them. If I bring him all beef hot dogs, like Nathan's all beef or something all beef, he will eat them. But it's those ones that say chicken, turkey, and poultry, or, you know, like weird combinations of meat. He's like, no, okay.
Yeah, I'm sure it's disgusting. I probably don't want to know what's in it.
Oh, I'm sure bologna's just as bad, and Vienna sausages are just as bad, and deviled ham is just as bad, and all that kind of stuff.
I think any type of processed meat is awful.
I worked at a restaurant for a while, and we served frozen chicken fried steaks. And I had a customer ask me one time what was in it, and I looked on the box, and I'll never forget, it said, meat conglomerate.
Ooh.
And it was so, that's such a disgusting, like a terrifically disgusting term, meat conglomerate. And I went back to the counter, and I said, meat conglomerate.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's kinda, I'll take two.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Velveeta.
You ordered the ribs. Meat. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't want to know what's in a McRib. I'll say that.
Yeah, it ain't ribs. It's rib conglomerate. So there's one scene that I just wanted to ask you guys about. And it's one of many scenes. It really has nothing to do with the movie. It's just a little, you know, 2 or 3 minute scene. And it's where, Chet and the kids, they all go out on the boat and they go fishing and they're using leeches for lures. Or for bait, I guess. And so the payoff is they all fall asleep, they wake up and they have leeches all over them. And then they do that silly movie
point
take where they all, right, they scream, they point at each other, whatever. So I wanted to just see, and I'm putting you guys on the spot. A, if you ever, you know, went fishing like this with your dad or whatever, and if you ever used any kind of weird bait.
My dad is, if there is such a thing as a professional amateur fisherman, that is my father. The weirdest thing I remember is, I want to say that he called them mealyworms. I don't know what they are. I just know they're smaller. They're white, almost
a
mealworm, and they're freaky. That's all I know. one time around my neighborhood for a couple of years, we had really bad rain and we would get these weird worm-like things come up out of the street that were semi-translucent, and you could see like a little bit of red in them and stuff, and I never knew what they were. And I remember like 4 years later, my dad was, I think it was ocean fishing, and he was using those same worms as bait, and I was like, I'm not going to know. These things are really disgusting, because other kids in the neighborhood, when they would come out up out of the road, would just stomp them, and stuff would go everywhere. Yeah, that kind of stuff freaked me out. Yes, Sean, that is the worm right there. Oh, they're freaky ugly.
Oh.
Yeah. They're not good. They're disgusting little things.
My dad, he wasn't a big fisherman, but I guess when I was probably in sixth grade, he had a work trip to the lake. Like, so it was all his buddies from work, and then a few of his work friends brought their kids, and so I got to go. So this is like our first father-son kind of thing, you know? And I remember we went out fishing like at midnight, and they had brought this giant thing of livers that they were using for bait. And I just remember being so gross, like reaching it, you know, into this bucket of raw livers. God, it's grossing me out right now just to think of it, you know? But, so we went fishing with livers. And I do remember there was a place not too far from my house that, it was a restaurant right by the lake. It was like a fish, like a bait. It was actually called the bait shop. And so they had two things. Half of the place was, fishing bait. So it had worms. It had that smell, you know, that you get from worms and bait and all that. And the other half was a short order cook place for breakfast. So we would go in there and get, you know, like eggs, bacon and sausage or whatever. And it was just that food combined with that smell of
not good. Yeah.
Worms and night crawlers and stuff like that. Ugh, yeah, but the food was really good. So
no, and I will say, just last weekend, my dad graced me with a 30-minute story on how he was so happy that Lock Raven, I believe it was, now has a bait dispensing machine. It's like a vending machine. He can just walk up, stick a card in, press a button, and a little styrofoam container of night crawlers will come out.
Yeah, I used to get my bait like that a lot years ago.
All I could say to my dad was, that sounds fantastic. Are you getting hungry yet, Dad?
I used to do a lot of fishing with my father, especially when we go camping. We would fish every morning. And we actually used to go on Sundays up until I had my first kid, Ethan. And then that kind of put an end to all that. You know, I wasn't getting sleep as it was. There's no way I was getting up extra early to go fishing, even though I was getting out of the house and away from a crying baby. And it's just like, I can't do it. And when I just took my oldest boy camping, just him and I, we went down to Allegheny tent camping. And it was the first time I really fished with him too. And we had a good time, and we didn't really do well, just used, you know, night crawlers, but he really enjoyed it. It's hard for me to go fishing when we go camping, just because I have two younger ones and my kids aren't exactly, they don't really pay attention that well. So I know someone's going to catch a hook in the eye or in the arm or something like that. So I just avoid it. But since it was him and I thought, you know what? I used to go fishing here with my father every year. Let's go fishing. He was all about it. We had a great time.
I honestly thought that's where in the movie, I thought that's where this story was going. I thought somebody was going to get hooked or whatever, you know, that's a fairly common, fishing, trope, I guess, that we see in movies like this, you know, but instead the payoff is, covered in leeches.
Well, yeah, I thought it was a wasted scene.
I definitely understand that there, Sean. I will say the reason the hook thing is prevalent in movies, because it's prevalent in real life. Me, my dad, and my brother going out on a boat at least once a year, me or my brother would hook either me, him, or my dad. And I got to say, my dad was always such a trooper. When we would hook him, he was like a man. I was like in awe of this guy just getting hooked and going, next time be more careful, and just pulling it out. Well, putting it out like it's nothing. Where me, he'd get hooked, screaming like a little girl, I can't believe you did that. But I will say the one favorite bait I had, only because it blew my mind, I actually won a trophy at a tournament using corn, canned corn, not cream corn, just regular canned corn. And the kicker was, I opened the can of corn, I sit there, pop a couple pieces in my mouth, and then I would take a piece and put it on the hook and throw it in. And I caught a rainbow trout that was around 13 inches long, which was the longest rainbow trout caught that day. And I was like 10. I was an idiot. I had no idea what I was even doing. I just knew, hey, I get to eat corn. I love corn.
The last thing I caught fishing was my buddy Jeff. Hooked him right in the arm. And I was like, oh, I never catch fish. But I'm so, I'm so type A, you know. I mean, for me, when I fish, it's like this. You cast it out, rah, 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 come all the way back. Well, where's the fish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it again. You know, I don't have the patience for it, I guess.
Yeah. And my dad, I remember I was like 13 or 14. He got really upset at me because I figured out I could get polarized sunglasses, putting them on top of my glasses, finagle the boat over by a stump and just take my rod and just drop it down into the water, look at the fish, watch the fish, boom, hook a fish, you know, and I would literally catch like three or four fish in like a half an hour. And he was so mad at me. He was like, you're cheating kind of thing. And I'm thinking, the goal is to catch fish. I'm catching fish. You should be happy.
You're no. snagging.
Yeah, he didn't. He
that's
didn't
not
think,
legal.
He didn't no, think that just, was very sportsmanlike.
That, no, I think
it's not. People look down upon that.
No. I say I don't care because either way, the fish didn't know they were being fished, and I knew I was fishing. So I used technology to my advantage. It's just the same as these people with these fish finder things. It's just mine was more accurate because it was my eyeballs.
Yeah, we have salmon runs up here, and people used to do that. They would snag, and you're not supposed to do it. It's frowned upon.
Eh, they can go to hell. They can go to hell.
As far as scenes go, I mean, I don't know. We could probably wrap it up as far as the scenes with the ending of, you know, the blowout they have, Chet and Roman.
That was so good. I'm sorry. I thought that was so good. It was well laid out, well paced. When he told John Candy the lie about the scene in the bathroom, John Candy's face was literally like distraught. He was like, I cannot believe I said something like that. I am such a jackass.
Well, I think that's a common fear that people have, you know, is that you've said something, you know, we've all said something maybe behind someone's back or whatever. And then, you know, that person, I mean, basically what Roman tells Chet is that, you know, he was in the bathroom and he overheard Chet, you know, saying that he was a no good guy or whatever at his own wedding. And you can feel, John Candy emoting in this scene where he is like, he is genuinely sorry and he genuinely feels bad, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that's happened to all of us, you know, but really eventually what we find out is, that Roman is playing his brother-in-law.
For what? Was it $25,000 he wanted or something like that?
Well, he was asking for that and he basically said, well, then just give me whatever you can and we'll cover the difference on Monday.
Yeah. And he does against his wife's wishes. You can tell she doesn't want him to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and they still leave. They still end up leaving the cabin. And that's when he feels bad when his wife is just like, I can't believe how, you know, thoughtful you were to include him in something and, you know, forgiving. And it really, I think, struck him how awful of a thing he was doing because he wasn't an investor anymore. He mm-hmm. you know, we find out that, you know, he hasn't been investing for like, what, a couple years. And so he felt guilty, went back to the cabin and,
he confesses. Spilt the
beans, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'll say the whole movie, all his wife basically had the whole time was just snarky looks and like one-liners like, yeah, you go, Roman, yeah. The whole movie, this was the only part where she actually got dialogue. And to be honest, I thought she did good because she made it seem genuine, like, you are such a good guy. You are such a good guy. You just show how family can always get together and always come out at the end and top and work together and be a team. And you offered that to him. You are so good. And you could just see Dan Aykroyd turning from cocky, arrogant, I got over on him, to I can't believe what I just did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she did play that part well. And I believe that was Annette Bening, who is Warren Beatty's wife.
Oh.
I believe this was her first role. In her first movie role, I believe, when I looked it up, because I knew, I was like, I know her from somewhere.
Yeah, and she has that face.
Yeah. But yeah, she played that real kind of snotty woman, you know, just kind of letting her husband take care of everything. And but it was definitely a good scene. And I think they both, because even when Roman told him the lie prior to leaving, I hadn't seen the movie in a while, so I forgot that he was BSing him, and his character came across very believable, with the story. And like you said, John Candy's character, Chet, was really hurt by what he said. He didn't remember, but he must have said it.
Right.
He must have said it. And it wasn't just like, oh, I got caught saying something. He really felt bad. You could see, even though he was getting pissed off with Roman the whole movie, he was irritated by him. He felt horrible to make somebody feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so Roman not only convinces Chet that he has said this, but he convinces us as the viewers that this really happened. You know, I mean, we really believe at that point. And what's kind of, ironic, I guess, is this is the first time that we really feel any sympathy for Roman,
right,
as a character, you know. And then, of course, later, just a few minutes later, we have the rug pulled out from under us, you know, yeah. And when we realized that he was full of it.
Yeah, but then you kind of get it back a little bit. Because then with the scene, you know, as this is all going on, like the twins were supposed to be waiting in the car, which I thought was kind of funny. Like, you got this big storm coming in, and they go out to look for the twin girls, Chet and Roman, and they end up finding them down like an old shaft or something that's, you know, flooding up or whatever. And he wants Chet to go down and save them. And he's like, dude, this be a father for once in your life to these girls. You be the father and go down there. And you kind of feel bad because he doesn't want to do it, but he realizes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I need to learn from Chet, which he did earlier in the movie after Chet told the horrific bear story and he hears Chet explain to his son, Ben, like, right, look, this is just a tale. He goes in and tried hard, which was funny. He tried really hard to comfort his girls from the story by telling them about another horrific story that he made up.
Yeah.
And they just lay there all night with their eyes open.
So one thing that I have to talk about, is the kids in this movie and the free reign that they have, which I thought, and maybe this is because it was the 80s, but you have Chet's kid. Do we know how old his kids are? I'm guessing like 12 and
I would 12 say like and 15, yeah, maybe.
Something like that, you know. And then we have Roman's girls who are maybe 8, 9, something like that, twins. At any point in this movie, these kids are allowed to just wander freely through the town. I mean, that we've got the 12-year-old and the 15-year-old that are off wandering around. And like I said, maybe this is just an 80s kind of thing, because I remember in the 80s, I don't know, maybe it's just because we're older now that it seemed like it was a safer place or whatever. But now if I'm on vacation and there's a thunderstorm, I'm not just leaving my kids out in the car to go wander around, or I don't know, there was just a whole part of that, and it's not presented as something that's abnormal in the movie. It's just what these kids do. They go wander the whole city.
Yeah, well, I think it's just a reoccurring opinion of ours is that it is totally different, because we would go to this – we went to this beach house once, and we had to be probably around the same age as Chet's kids, maybe even a little younger, and, you know, we were able to walk down the street to this little, like, you know, mom and pop store by firecrackers and, you know, candy and everything, like stuff that I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess we're just a little more protective of kids doing this stuff.
That's
it's scary.
Well, I remember I must have been, I'm thinking between 11 and 13. We went to Florida. We went to Disney World, but we stayed in Jellystone Park. So it was like, you know, Yogi Bear kind of stuff. And I remember hopping on my skateboard, going basically all the way back to the entrance, which was at least a mile away, by myself, getting an ice cream with a dollar I got from my mom. And for some reason, the girl at the counter wanted to chat with this little dork with huge bottle cap glasses from Maryland. And I remember my mom coming down.
And a sweet skateboard.
Well, very sweet skateboard. And then like 2 hours later coming down saying, what happened to you? And I remember it was like I had just a relentless crush on this girl because she wanted to talk to me. And I remember thinking, what's wrong? I just came down to get an ice cream. Don't worry about it. And the next day, I remember when we walked into the store, the girl was at the cash register again, and she said, "Hi, Steve." And my mom was like, "She knows your name, little skank." Because, you know, that's my mom's mentality. Every girl must be a skank.
Right. And this movie, you know, that was the one thing that I did like about the love story. Like I said, it felt a little tacked on. It felt a little kind of out of place, but I think that is every kid of that age. I mean, that is our fantasy, that you go and that the pretty girl does talk to you and that romance does happen, when at that age, so many of us were just afraid to approach that girl, you know, or afraid to, you know, talk to girls.
Yeah. And the one thing I liked about this movie and that love scene was it wasn't overdone. They didn't show a whole lot. They left a lot up to your imagination, and you knew clearly how Buck felt about her. It was obvious, and that's all they really needed.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, when another story about when I was camping as a kid, we had this cabin at the top of the trail, and, there was a cabin right below us. They were kind of sectioned off. They were a little nicer. They had rooms, more than one main room. And there was, I remember there was a girl that was down at the other cabin. She was probably at least a year, maybe 2 years older than me, but it was kind of that, it was nothing like this. It was like, oh, maybe I can talk to this, but it never happened the whole week. Never talked to this girl. You know, I was just too afraid to. Probably even if it was, if it was boys, probably would have went and played or something. But I think I was probably like 13 at the time. So you're in that real awkward stage where you're interested in girls, but you're not interested in talking to them because you're afraid.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah. So, I guess, you know, and some of the other, throwback reviews, we talked about, cultural impacts, you know, like in Goonies, we talked about like the music videos and lunchboxes and stuff like this. I looked online. I couldn't find a single thing. I did find, someone had printed out the DVD cover and ironed it on a t-shirt. They were selling that on Etsy. But other than that, I couldn't find any retro stuff for this film. It makes sense. There were no Great Outdoors action figures. I would have bought the Bald Bear action set, or maybe the mine.
Yeah.
the flooding mine action kit or whatever, you know, but
there's no really question that you would have bought it.
Right. And I would have left their heads on. You would have had the bear maul everybody and pull all their heads off. But yeah.
I would have had the raccoons.
They could have had a raccoon where you pull the string and they would say, tell us all what hot dogs are made out of.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day, you know, because when we did the Goonies and I looked for, you know, memorabilia or merchandise, and there really didn't seem to be a ton. I thought there would be more. But then I was thinking, if there is more for this movie, I'm going to be kind of upset. I just didn't think it was deserving. But then you got Camp Candy, which was 89.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that was like stemming off of this? Maybe he was, you know, wanted to do something.
You know, it could be. I got the feeling just from watching it, especially in the closing credits, you know, there's a big song and dance number, and you see it's almost like the people are out of character. It's like everybody's just having a good time singing and dancing or whatever. And I kind of wondered, in my head, that's how the making of this film was, you know, that they all basically, they went on vacation. They all got to go out to these cabins. They all got to stay out, you know, and, you know, just basically have a good time.
My God, I forgot about Camp Candy.
According to Wikipedia, this thing was filmed in 3 weeks.
I mean, so that is just a
vacation. I mean, I guess it's believable. I mean, it's just a couple of skits. So, but that I was still, when I saw 3 weeks, I was like, wow. But yeah, that ending scene, the credit scene, I really enjoyed that part. But it was like, and I hope it was just out of character, because you had Roman, who was like totally all over Chet's wife. I mean,
it almost seemed like they were filmed at different times.
Yes.
Like they weren't at the same place at the same time or something. I caught on that, you know.
Chet seemed a little standoffish about it, a little put off by it too.
It was
until
creepy.
The girl is dancing on the table next to him.
Yeah, well, yeah, I remember thinking, wow, Roman was a scumbag after all.
And Chet's okay with it now at the end.
Right, right.
He accepts his scumbagness.
Right. Oh, that Roman.
And I don't remember seeing Roman's wife in that scene, but I don't know. I did. I enjoyed the end credits. I was sitting there watching them at work when I was rewatching this, and I don't know. I thought it was kind of funny.
I'm a fan of end credits because that's where someone gets the okay to do almost anything that they want to do. You know, because you see some weird things sometimes at the end credits. Sometimes you see some cool things. Nowadays, it's hip to do things with end credits, you know, with like Iron Man and all the Marvel stuff. But back then, it really was just a bonus.
And, you know, speaking of talking about the raccoons that were talking and the quotes over them, have you guys ever seen Furry Vengeance? It's a newer movie within the past couple of years. It has, I think, Brandon Fraser in it.
No, and, I don't think so.
Oh, it's a funny movie, and there's a lot of like animals talking. Basically, they're tormenting him because he's there for his company to develop this land and tear it all down. And his boss is this Asian comedian guy. I forget his name, but he's really funny. Man, I wish I could place
Furry
his name.
Furry Vengeance. Okay.
Yeah, when you find it, his boss. But at the end credits, do you remember "Insane in the Membrane" by Cypress Hill? Well, they all are kind of singing it and dancing, and they get real nutty. It's actually a pretty the movie itself is a fun movie, but the end credits are like this, something you sit and watch. Actually, longer than this one, the interaction.
The one thing that struck me about these end credits that song, and I looked up the song because I knew the song, but I didn't know what the name of it was, and the name of it is "Land of a Thousand Dances." But it's one of those songs that everybody knows, you know. But when I looked up because it didn't sound like the original, and so when I looked it up, it says it was performed by the Elwood Blues Review featuring Wilson Pickett.
Yeah.
And so Elwood Blues, obviously being, you know, the Blues Brothers, and Elwood, you know, Blue being Dan Aykroyd or whatever. So, I didn't know if he already had this recorded or if he just wanted it recorded. I didn't know if it was maybe they have to pay less royalties if he performs it in the movie. So, but I just thought that was interesting that they used his version of it.
Well, here's the reason why I knew that song and I knew the name of the song. 1984, Captain Lou Albino did that on a WWF record. And that's the only reason why I immediately knew that song and I knew its name. Cause I mean, Captain Lou doing anything back then was a big deal.
Was it Captain Lou Albano or?
Of course, Captain Lou Albino. It's not with rubber bands.
He wasn't an albino, was he?
Whatever. I'm from Baltimore. But yeah, that was just a good song, but I kept remembering also, they wouldn't stop doing the Watusi with the eyes, like the Batusi from Adam West Batman, which also mildly freaked me out a little bit. But Captain Lou singing it, I'm perfectly okay with.
I don't want to see him dance.
No, he couldn't dance at all.
No, he was too busy being Cindy Lauper's dad.
And being Mario in the Super Mario That's Brothers true. Super Show.
And he sings and dances, do the Mario.
Do the Mario.
Oh, my kids. I accidentally introduced them that show, and my son loves it. But whenever I sing that song, he just literally runs out of the room.
Yeah, my kids don't like it either when I sing it.
Just but they like that. Love that song.
But yeah, they love that show a little too much sometimes. I'm like, oh my God, Mario Brothers again. Put something else on. Put SpongeBob. I can't stand SpongeBob. I'm like, put SpongeBob on sometimes. But I don't know. Maybe I'm older and the acting is horrible. And I don't know. it gets under my skin, I guess. I've just heard it way too many times because my oldest boy watched it. Now my younger son watches it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I probably myself, I think I would rate it 4 or 5, this movie. I don't know. How about you, Rob? Do you still think you'd rate it a 7?
Well, you know, as far as a movie, you know, like if I were going to sit down and watch this movie from start to finish, I mean, I'm probably a 4, which is not, it doesn't, it, people don't agree with that because they go, oh, that movie's great. But when you watch it, the movie's not great. What's great are all these little stories, you know? And so, it reminded me of when I was watching it, it reminded me of A Christmas Story, where you have all these little different, I mean, you have the Red Ryder BB gun story. You have the decoder ring story. You have all these little stories, but in A Christmas Story, they're kind of woven together into, you know, an overall arc of, you know, the BB gun that takes it through the entire thing. And this, I mean, I guess our arc is that they're on the family vacation, you know, but it just doesn't, I mean, as, like I said, as a film, I don't think it sticks together very well, but the stories, I think, is what people remember. And I think that's probably more important. You know, people remember the bear story. They remember, like we said, the chasing the bats around. They remember, the goofy water skiing scene or whatever. So,
yeah.
So I enjoyed those scenes. I just didn't, I probably wouldn't sit down and watch this again from start to finish. But like you said, if it were on cable and I was flipping channels, I'd probably watch, you know, whatever that little segment was until the next one started.
Right. Yeah. How about you, Dor?
I honestly would rate it higher just because I remember John Candy on SCTV. I'm just a John Candy fan. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Like anything he was in instantly was credible in my book. And I'll say if there was an arc, it would be John Candy's sanity in this movie. Because you see him go from great to annoyed to just, you know, hammered to ignorant to crazy to despair, then back to happy again. But and I will say the only letdown to me in this movie was the blatant tease to more content. Because now Roman at the end was living at their house.
Right. I was going to mention that too. So at the very end of this movie, Chet's wife, John Candy's wife, has basically agreed that Roman can move in with them. And it's not Roman. It's Roman. It's Roman's wife and their two creepy kids are going to move in. So what would you guys say if your wife invited, I don't know if your wives have sisters or whatever, but if your wives invited a family of 4 to move in with you without running that past you first, how would that go over?
For me, I honestly, between my wife and I, not well. but I, what am I going to do?
Right. I told my wife, I said, I'm not saying that couldn't happen. I'm saying there would be plenty of room to sleep because I'd be out of there. You feel free to invite them. I'll go stay at their place or something.
Yeah. But I know how my wife is and it just wouldn't happen. My house is too small. So that'd be my excuse. Sorry. Too small.
Yeah. I'll say I've said to my wife in the past that her sister and kids can come live with us. You know, if we're not going through the best of times, I know her sister would support us. And if her sister has down times, we're there to support her.
Right, but that's a conversation you guys have had.
And if her husband comes over, he's dead within 24 hours. That is a guarantee.
Right, he's not going on the fishing trip with Dor.
Nope, ain't going to happen. But to have it just out of the blue, I would expect some kind of compensation of some sort back to my manhood bank, you know, because that's just not cool.
Yeah, I can't imagine that happening without a, and like I said, it's the end of a movie and it's the feel good moment where they're going to help out the guy that is down on his luck. So I understand that from a movie standpoint, but when I was watching that, I thought, God, I would kill my wife if she invited somebody, you know, without mentioning it to me.
Well, yeah, I'll say Sean will understand if that would happen. My wife better let me go get a phone. You know,
yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Well, I just want to say that my rating of a 4, and obviously I'm no film critic, it's just our own personal opinions, but the 4, obviously, it does not reflect what I thought of the acting. The acting was great as far as Aykroyd and Candy. It's just, you know, it's just that skit movie thing. It kind of got old. I just wouldn't probably go out of my way to watch it again.
I thought there was a lot of funny parts, you know, like what we said, the little skits. There were skits that had good payoffs or whatever. But overall, like when we're talking about, you know, that when those two, the twins, when they got lost, I was like, good, who cares? Yeah. I mean, I had no, I was not worried for their safety at all. I mean, I wasn't interested in those kids at all. I don't know. There was just a lot. I thought John Candy and Dan Aykroyd, and John Candy's wife carried it, you know, and I was interested in them and I felt like they were really going through this little thing back and forth. But a lot of the other stuff, I just didn't feel like I cared about that much.
Yeah. I'll say to somebody, if they did forget this movie, I will give them 3 reasons to watch the movie again. 1, John Candy's clothes. 2, Dan Aykroyd's clothes. They're just great. They're fantastic. They're so dated. It's unbelievably good. But the 3rd is the silent, funniest scene in the movie, the one that everyone forgets, and I'm not going to spoil it. I'll just say the old man's birthday party.
Yeah, I thought that was a little... I was like, yeah, another scene for me. I was like, yeah, another scene. That's
I just liked
go,
it because
go
it,
with the leech scene
because it completely blindsided everybody. Nobody, it, I think so.
Right. I think for me, a good setup in a comedy, and I know we're running long on time, so I'll wrap this up, Sean. But for me, a funny joke is like there's got to be a payoff. It's got to come back full circle later in the movie. You know what I mean? Like you set up a joke now. And then later on, it comes back and there's a payoff, you know? So like there was one character in the movie that, had been hit in the head. What was it?
Lightning.
66 times or whatever.
66 times.
Right. And so there's no payoff other than the fact that later we see him get hit the 67th time.
Exactly.
But there's no joke there. There's no. You know, there's no build up. There's no reason for it. It's just, hey, let's, you know, it's like they're sitting around the writer's table. They're like, hey, well, what would be funny? How about a guy that's been hit in the head with lightning and later on he gets hit in the head with lightning? I mean, it just doesn't have anything to do with the rest of the movie. It's just like they tossed some random character in and they throw him in and then out he goes. They move on to the next thing, you know? So there's a lot of stuff that didn't work for me.
But he got to make fun of his skunk hairdo.
Exactly. Yeah. And I will agree this is a very skit-based movie. Ultra. You could literally take it, split it up into 10 parts, have it as 10 individual skits, and you would never coalesce them as being one movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could totally see the lightning guy being at a Saturday Night Live skit where they're sitting at a bar. They start talking to the guy. He's been hit 66 times. You know, he walks outside. You hear this loud boom. He comes back in 67. You know, I mean,
just like, or they look at each other and the bartender's like 67.
Right. Yeah. You know, so a lot of things like that where it's, and maybe they were just like, you know, seeds of SCTV skits or maybe from Dan Aykroyd, Saturday Night Live skits that were just hanging around and they thought, well, that'd be funny. Let's throw that in, you know, so some of it worked, some of it didn't.
You know, it's 88. We're getting close to the 90s movie, which it felt like a 90s movie to me, other than the camcorder and the giant brick cell phone. It seemed more like a 90s movie for me, I guess. I don't know. It didn't have that 80s cheese as much to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It was good. I'm done with it.
Let's put it on the shelf and pull out the next movie, Sean.
Yeah, and speaking of the next movie, we are going to be doing Caddyshack.
Oh.
So
we go from talking raccoons to
gophers.
Dancing gopher. All right.
Yeah, 1980, which I thought it was like 70.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was 78 or something. But yeah, 1980 Caddyshack, which has got tons of great actors, man. I'm looking forward to this one. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'll just say this is almost like the diner of comedies. How that movie, I want to say, was called Diners, where it had a whole bunch of names in it that turned out to be big time stars. Mm-hmm. And this is like the comedy version of that, because there's a lot of people who show up in this movie.
Yeah, so that'll be in 2 weeks. We'll be doing Caddyshack. So that's going to end up this episode. The door. Any last words? People find you? Anything exciting you got going on?
No, just go to podcast.com if you want to hear more of me, but I cannot implore people more. iTunes, throwback reviews, leave a review, period.
Very good. And you got a lot of good stuff going on over there. People, if you don't know, Dor runs the, he's the head man. What are you, the president? What is your signature?
President and owner.
President and owner of podnuts.com.
I'm not only a member, I'm the president.
Yes, it's a great tech site of a bunch of podcasts, one which I'm on. And you got a new one coming out too, don't you, soon?
I actually got a couple.
Android one?
Got a couple coming out. Mobile Dynasty, which is about mobile hacking, whether it's iPhone, Firefox phone, Android phone, or whatever. We have Geeksters coming over from Geeksters.tv with Tim Bauermeister, Martin Rambo Obando, and Eric Ardini when available.
Very cool. That's awesome that they're coming over.
And to be honest, more stuff than that coming.
Well, we look forward to it. Definitely check out podnuts.com. Find some good stuff over there. And Rob, how about you, buddy? What do you got exciting going on?
Well, you can find me at RobOhara.com, and you can find my other podcast, You Don't Know Flack, at podcast.RobOhara.com. And like Throwback Reviews, those are available on iTunes. And is Throwback on Stitcher?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
We are on Stitcher.
So I know there's a lot of non-iTunes people that pull it down on Stitcher. So you can find both podcasts at both those places.
Yeah, I only have iTunes because I have to.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm an Android guy, hence Android App Addicts, other podcasts I do with Dor and a couple other cool dudes. I'm going to totally put you on the spot, and if you don't want to answer, you can't answer, you don't tell me, but are you going to be doing another episode of Adventure Club Podcast? I thought I saw you and Guy Hutchinson tweeting back about you got something in the works. Are you not allowed to, are you at liberty about that?
Yeah. Am I at liberty to talk about it? Yeah, I think, you know what, Guy Hutchinson and John Jay, two very cool guys, and they are, they're retro guys like we are, you know. They do a Back to the Future podcast that's just dedicated to the Back to the Future movies.
That's the Flux Capacitor.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And they do, they have I think Camel Clutch is their podcast, which is just about wrestling movies. So yep. They do a lot of retro stuff, but Guy just hit me up, whenever he has a retro topic come up, and every now and then they'll have me on the show, and he recently mentioned on Twitter he wants to do a show about AOL, America Online. So we're gonna kick it dial up style.
Yeah, because you've done a couple over there and they've been really entertaining.
Yeah,
episodes.
They're fun dudes.
Yeah, you know, it was funny when he was because he had done a few episodes on Back to the Future, and then he decided to do an actual dedicated show to it. And he was on Twitter, I remember he was asking like suggestions of names. And I know I had tweeted out to him to call it the Hope Chest, because I thought, man, that was the funniest for me. That was the funniest part when Marty wakes up and he's like, where's my pants? She's like, oh, they're over there on my Hope Chest. But Capacitcast is a cool name too. So.
Yeah. I had, what did I do? gigawatt cast or a 1.21 gigawatt or gigawatt cast or something. Mine were all terrible, so. They were like really bad stretches, you know? Orange vest cast.
Yeah. Still looking past cast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, very cool. I look forward to that. And definitely people check out the Adventure Club podcast. Good stuff over there. And for me, just go to, I'm on Twitter myself, but I pretty much try to just use the Throwback Reviews Twitter, which is me. So if there's anything I don't like, you can blame me. But you can go to the host on the Throwback Reviews. Actually, if you go to throwbackreviews.com, I made an Android app a few months back. It's a Mel Blanc application. It's just a soundboard. And I want to hit 400 downloads. I think I'm at about 330 right now, which totally shocks me that I would even get that. So if you haven't, it's only for Android. So if you have an Android phone, go to throwbackreviews.com, take the link. I think it's on slideme.com. It's just basically, it's a totally legitimate third party type, app store.
I think it's slide.me.
Yeah, I think it's slide.me. So it's not it's totally legit.
I was wrong.
It's just different than the Google Play.
Slideme.org.
Yeah, or just go to throwbackreviews.com. On the right hand side, there is a link to my app. And yeah, I'd really like to hit 400. Make me feel good.
That's cool.
But,
I want to get some more people on the Facebook page. And you mentioned that was Facebook. What is it? /throwbackreviews?
Podcast. Yes, Throwback Reviews Podcast is the Facebook page. Yeah. There's also a link on the website to that as well.
Because I'm getting I want to hang out there. I want people to come tell us about this episode and the next episode. If you want to talk about, tell us what you think of the other ones. But you want to post pictures from the movies, anything that you want to share on there. Let's I know these guys are Google Plus guys, but I'm a Facebook guy, so I'm getting lonely over in the Facebook page. So come over there and come chat with me. Yeah,
Rob and all the grandmothers.
Right. Or send your mother over. Right. Send your mom.
Yeah, we don't care. We'll talk to her too.
Exactly.
But then I can learn the Facebook because I'm kind of lost over there. I, like you said, I'm more of a Google Plus guy.
Yeah.
We don't have anything over there. I don't want to have to monitor another thing, but, yeah, definitely join, like us on the Throwback Reviews podcast on the Facebook page and yeah, definitely get in there and we'll try to interact a little bit.
Yeah. If the fans demand it, Sean will come over to Facebook.
Yep. And I'm there. So, all right. That was a long closing, but it was fun anyway. So, next one, Caddyshack in 2 weeks. But until then, thanks for listening.
Big Bear chase me!